You're listening to a podcast from the Today programme on BBC Radio 4. Setting up a social media account in someone else's name is not allowed under the rules set by Facebook and Twitter. And if one is used to threaten or harass or to post embarrassing or damaging material, that could now result in tougher criminal sanctions. The Crown Prosecution Service has begun consulting on new social media guidelines that would place more emphasis on the online behaviour of a defendant. In 2014, Falami Priye's former partner set up a fake profile on Facebook and used it to send explicit pictures of her to her family and friends. The experience led her to set up the support website Victims of Internet Crime. She joins us now from a radio car in Bristol. Good morning.
Good morning.
When did you first become aware that this material was being circulated in your name?
Well, when he basically sent me a text to say, you know, if, as you like showing yourself to people, you don't mind me, you know, sharing photos of our time together. But I wasn't thinking about Facebook at all. So then I was alerted by people contacting me who had obviously been sent friend requests, and they were saying to me, well, Falami, why have you been sent friend requests and we're already friends on Facebook? And I said, well, I haven't. And that's how I was alerted to it.
And what was on that other Facebook feed?
About 9 explicit photographs.
Of
me,
right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And what did you then do about it? You went to the police?
Yes, I did. I contacted the police straight away, in fact, and then my daughter, at the time, was not on my Facebook as a friend, and she obviously put my name into Facebook. She found the two profiles, and the only way to contact Facebook at that time, because obviously things have changed now, was to basically click on each image and report those images one by one to Facebook.
And what was the effect of all of this on you, knowing this material was there? Because I imagine it took some time to get it taken down.
Well, through Facebook, actually, what actually happened, a bit later on in the evening, they got back to us and said that the page had actually been taken down, and they hadn't done it, so I presume that my ex-partner had done that. In itself, I was devastated because I know there was people in work that I'd known that had seen those pictures. You know, there was a man that sat across the office from me. I know he'd saw the pictures, and, you know, it was horrible to have to go through that experience. It was quite shameful and embarrassing.
And your former partner eventually got a 6-month suspended sentence.
Yes, he did.
How would you like cases like yours to be treated in the future?
In the future, well, you know, at the minute, if anybody puts anything on Facebook like that and sets up a profile in somebody else's name, at the minute, the current law actually says you have to prove intent. Now, that's an intentional act. So, personally, you know, that the intentional act needs to come out of that law, because anybody that does that has done it with intent. And, you know, I think there needs to be more protection for witnesses. I mean, not witnesses, for
victims, people like you.
Yeah, because, you know, there's no anonymity at all.
Right, and that would have made a difference to you in the process,
definitely,
you went through in court.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Well, listening to your story is Alison Saunders, the Director of Public Prosecutions. She's here in the studio. Good morning.
Good morning.
How would Falami's case be treated differently if it came to court under the new guidelines you're consulting on?
Well, the new guidelines make it very clear that where somebody has set up a false identity or used somebody else's identity and then posted pictures like that, that we should be prosecuting under the revenge pornography offences, which were new last year. And certainly we've seen an increase in the number of those cases going through the courts. And I was pleased to hear that in Falami's case, her ex-partner was indeed prosecuted and convicted. So,
but would he get a longer sentence? I mean, his sentence was a 6-month suspended mm-hmm. sentence. So in this new framework, would he get a custodial sentence or a longer one?
Well, the guidelines are for prosecutors, and we obviously don't impose the sentences. That's a matter for the courts. But what's important for prosecutors is that they make sure that they refer all the sort of aggravating factors to the court so that the court can impose a sentence that's appropriate. And we have certainly seen some cases of revenge pornography, not just where there have been suspended sentences, but where people have been imprisoned.
Do you take the point that she made about the anonymity of victims, that in a case like this, there is no anonymity as there is for a rape victim? So she had to, when she went to court, she had to see her name out there again, which was
part of her former partner's intention in the first place.
Absolutely, and I entirely agree with her that it's very difficult because, of course, the revenge pornography offence is all about humiliating, embarrassing, causing distress to the victims. By going to court and not having any anonymity and any protection in that way, it, to some extent, does exacerbate that as well.
But are you proposing that, then?
I have previously suggested that we look at that for victims. Again, it's not within my gift to do that. It's a matter of legislation.
But do you believe it would be the right thing to do?
I do, in the same way as in blackmail cases, for the same reasons. Again, we look at anonymity there for victims as well.
The broad thrust of what you are doing is taking the law further into the online sphere of someone's activity and therefore into the further into the sphere of people's free speech, possibly infringing people's free speech. So how would you, where would you draw the line?
Well, the line is drawn high. So where we look at, for example, if it's malicious communications and people are sort of trading insults or something like that over the internet, we've made it very clear that the offence there is grossly offensive. So that's a very high threshold. What we don't want to do is we all use the internet all the time, we use social media all the time, it is a fantastic tool. What we don't want to do is do anything that's a chilling effect on free speech, but where it's used for crime and where it's seriously impacting on people's lives, then that's where we do need to look at it and look at whether we have the evidence to prosecute.
And so the message you're sending to anyone who might be considering doing this sort of thing is be aware that what you are doing online is also a crime.
Absolutely, and I think that's quite often people forget. The internet's so quick, people use it sort of without thinking sometimes. Actually stop and think, because what you are doing could be injuring somebody, could be abusing somebody, and that will be an offence. If we have the evidence, we will prosecute it.
Should you have looked at these guidelines on social media earlier? They've been in place, I think, for the last 4 years, during which time the internet landscape and people's use of social media has changed tremendously.
Absolutely, and the guidelines have been really good for the last 4 years. They did need updating. There have been new offences which we have put in, a new ways of using social media, there are new platforms. So that's why it's timely now to update them and put it out for consultation.
But 4 years is a long time in the world of social media.
It is a long time. What we don't want to do is we want to have some consistency and some stability. We don't want to be changing them every 6 months. So that's why now is a good time, because if we changed them 12 months ago, we'd have missed the new offences that came in. So it's a good time to do it.
Alison Saunders, Director of Public Prosecutions. Thank you.
Thank you.
Before you turn off, I just want to mention another podcast which you might enjoy listening to. I'm Becky Milligan, and occasionally I take politicians out for lunch. The difference is that I record the whole thing. Nothing is scripted, no question out of bounds, nothing off the record. Guests include Unite's Lem McCluskey, the Conservatives' Ian Duncan Smith, Labour's John McDonnell, and Liberal Democrat Baroness Shirley Williams. Did you not think, well, I can do this too, I can be great?
I thought I could be good, but not great.
You thought you could be good, but not great? Do you still think that?
Yes.
And many more. I'll be uploading lunches as and when they happen, or from the archive, and you can subscribe to the podcast At Lunch With, which is found on the BBC Radio iPlayer, or at bbc.co.uk/PM.